Okay, let's give a rousing welcome for our warm-up speaker, Sammy.
Is this thing going to buzz?
No.
Darn it.
It's
on. Oh, it is. Oh, it's recording. I thought it was a clock. I thought it was a clock. Oh, my God. I'm Sammy, and I'm an alcoholic. Well, I was going to say I was really grateful tonight that I'm the warm-up speaker and not the main speaker, because this is the kind of stuff I don't like to do. I really don't like to put myself out there in front of everybody. And it's just because of my ego. You know, that's the thing that always gets us alcoholics in a world of shit is our ego. And I've probably maybe lost some opportunities in my life, or I don't know, just lost some things over the ego that I just maybe, because I don't want to do things, or I don't want to talk to people, or I don't want to see people or whatever, because that look good is gone. And I, on the flip side of that, now that I'm really getting older, I've had to get some acceptance in there, you know, and that's really difficult because you just can't stop Mother Nature, you know. She's just going to do what she's going to do with you no matter what. And so I have to work on a lot of acceptance there, and that's been difficult for me. But, you know, that's just one more thing in life. It's okay. I guess I got sober in, it was April Fool's Day, 1980, and maybe there was some days in there before that I wasn't sure about, because I was in blackout for quite a while in there, and so I figured April Fool's Day, that day I remembered, so I picked that day as my sober day, you know, worked out that way. And I was very sick, and I was a blackout drinker since day one. I mean, when I was 14, I remember blacking out and not remembering anything and really creating a lot of havoc for a 14-year-old, you know, getting laid and, you know, really doing things that not good to do at that age, and getting in fights and going to jail and all those things that you would never want your children to go through, I went through. And I'm grateful that my daughter never ended up that way. And so far, my granddaughter hasn't. I don't know if this is, what do you call it, when it runs in the family. My dad was an alcoholic, and his dad, so then I got it. But, and the funny thing is that the person that I never wanted to be like is my dad. And I find that I'm many ways like him, many ways like him. Selfish, self-centered, to the bone, and I look at this program and I think, how come I got this and he didn't? You know, because I have a way now to get out of that and to take care of my family and love my family and give them the things that they need and that they deserve. And he can never do that. You know, he's in his 90s, as a matter of fact, and he still is by far the most selfish human being I've ever met. And I know nothing but alcoholics and dope things, and he's the worst. And he's not drinking anymore, and he still is the worst. You know, he's something else. And I don't know, there's a lot of women here, but I lost custody of my daughter. And when I was newly sober, I used to say things like, you know, I wouldn't change anything. This is the way it's supposed to be, and da-da-da-da-da, and that happened for a reason and whatever. But, you know, in the later years here, I would change that in a minute if I could. I would, because I missed out on being a mother. And I don't like to talk about it because I get weepy and stuff, and I don't like to cry in meetings, but it makes me look bad. But I've got to be a mother, and, you know, since I've been sober, and that's been a great thing. And that wasn't an easy thing, because you can't, when you first get sober and you've been a mother who was never there, you can't just all of a sudden be there, you know, hi, I'm sober now and I'm your mother. You can't just do that. It takes a lot of years and a lot of time and understanding and things. So it's been a wonderful rewarding thing for me to be with my daughter, and her too, to be with me. Surprisingly enough, she tells me that, and that makes me feel good. I I had a good night tonight. I was kind of fussy because I worked hard all week and I couldn't wait for Friday to be here. And I don't know, I'm the only person that works hard, but I just I couldn't wait to get home and get changed and go to dinner. And I'm always running late, never be on time. And I had so much fun tonight because I love Rick. I just love Rick. He's been such a good friend. And to be with my husband and my ex-husband is always a joy for me because, you know, it's always fun at my expense. And really, trust me, I'm telling you the truth. And people don't believe that, you know, when I tell them. And I don't go around talking about it like at work and stuff, but if something comes up, you know, they're like, you're going with your ex-husband, such and such. Yeah. And your husband likes him? I go, well, no, I actually love him. And they're, you know, like it's such a wonderful experience. And I think that the icing on the cake is that most people don't understand it, you know. So that makes me feel even better. Like I got something you don't. I don't know. Something. Let's see. What else should I say? I don't really have much to say other than I'm grateful for the program. I don't go to a lot of meetings and you don't see me around much, which is, I know, selfish because we're supposed to be here for the newcomer. But I'm always willing to see people and talk to them and whatever. But I do work the steps, obviously, or I wouldn't still be sober. And I'm grateful that the steps are given to us so freely, and Rick got this focus. So for me, when he was showing this to us tonight, it was almost like holding a piece of gold, because this is the most spiritual thing there is this book. I mean, these people got together, and they, you know, they wrote this, they created the steps, and my God, and look at us, we're here, we get the benefit of all of that. And they even, Rick said they have, and they do, they have 6 pages, so they wanted to have something nice, so they got extra 6 pages. And so it's a pretty cool thing in many ways, not just the fact that it's an RAA book, but it's nice that he's sharing it here at this meeting. And if you haven't worked the steps yet, sorry, I've got a runny nose. If you've been here and you haven't worked the steps yet, because I always get hung up. Am I supposed to say you should really work the steps, or you know, I advise you to work the steps? But you really should work the steps, because if you don't, you know, you something bad will probably happen. You know, you probably will get drunk again, and you'll end up either dead or in jail or something worse. I don't know what's what, but it won't be pleasant. And I know when I started working the steps, for some reason the fourth step was like the big boogeyman to me. It freaked me out, scared me to death. And the people that were in my circle, my mentors, quit talking to me. They quit talking to me for a while because like, you're not working the steps. We told you to work the fourth step, and you're not working it. You know, so I don't have anything more to say to you. And I was like, well, I'm blonde. Would you want to talk to me? No, really, I'm from the beach. And all that shit quit working for me. And those excuses. And I was just afraid of it. I didn't know how to work it. And finally what I did was, and really I went back and forth for months. I got my big book and I got my 12x12 and I got a dictionary because I didn't know what words like love meant. And I drove up to Three Rivers and put myself in a motel there, and I just worked it. I read every line and just did what it said and answered the questions. Because there's questions in there, and there's questions in the 12 and 12. And if you just answer those questions, you know, you just do it as it is. You don't have to think too much about it or overcook it. You just answer the questions and be honest about it, you know, and pray. And look in the dictionary if you don't understand what the word means. You can do it really easily like that. And I did. And I flew down the mountain. I was so good. I was ready to do my fifth step. And my sponsor had me set up with somebody to do my fifth step that night because he didn't trust me not to do it. So we did my fifth step that night when I got back. And And it, what a freeing thing it was. And then I think that was when I really felt like I was a member of AA. Prior to that, I always was like a chicken shit. You know what I mean? It's like I really wasn't working it, so I wasn't really a part of anything. And that's when I really started to fit in. And of course, when you're at that state, you just can't stop talking about it. You know, it's just such a good thing. You want to share it with everybody and pound on the table. You got to work. Motherfucker, you got to work now, you know? And that's what I did. And I just got involved in AA. And if you haven't done that or something like that, you know, but work the steps, that's the whole key. And I never thought that I could, you know, nothing, I never really wanted to get a job. Don't get me wrong, I never thought I could get a job like I wanted to, because I didn't, but I could, you know, I could. I could actually go to work and see people and look at them and talk to them instead of running away from them being scared to death. And I can do that, and I can get things accomplished, and it still blows my mind when I look back, because I'm always thinking about what it was like then and what it's like today. I always have that running through my head, and sometimes it's just stuff that I don't want to think about, but it, nonetheless, it still just goes through there, and this is so much better today, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for all the people in AA who helped me through the years. And thank Rick for asking me to speak, and for dinner, thank you. Love you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. Take your seats, please. Okay, let's give a rousing welcome for our featured speaker, Punch. Oh, what are you doing, Brad? Messing with me again? I'm Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that's kind of important to me, anyway. And I was just your 30-minute, 10-minute speaker a few months ago, so I really don't know. You know, I don't know what I'm going to say or do that's been doing anything. But David L. back there said he's going to keep real sharp
notes.
But whenever I mess up, you know, he'll be able to correct me later, you know. But anything I say tonight is strictly, I'm just speaking for myself, and it's my own experience, my own opinion. I don't speak for anybody else or Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've got two goals tonight. And the first one is I've already accomplished. I showed up and I'm already talking. And no, because if I do that, you know, if I try to give away what I've got, I get to keep it. You know, and I did that when I was a 10-minute speaker here a few months ago. And since then, I kept what I had, you know. And so that's a pretty good deal. And then the other thing is hopefully somewhere along the line, maybe I tick one of you off. And I like to tick people off in Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, I know I do. I do. And but not in a bad way, but in a good way. Doesn't matter whether I'm right or wrong. That's not the important thing, you know. But if I say something and then you say, "Oh, that's bullshit," you know, or if you're new and you say, "Well, that's not what my sponsor told me," you know, and that's good, because you guys will go get together and you can figure out how bad and how wrong I was, you know, and that means you'll be doing something toward your own sobriety. So that's a good thing. Those are my two goals tonight. But I'm a hick from the sticks. I was raised, grew up in Springville. I I captured the title of town drunk at a young age, you know, and being town drunk isn't just that you're one of the biggest drunks amongst the other drunks. It's when the normal people in town are talking about that drunk son of a bitch. You know, that's when you... And I took it over from the fellow that eventually ended up being my sponsor, you know. And so anyway, like I said last time, I had two things that weren't, you know, really good things to have if you want to fit into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I got here on a court card, but I got here not liking people, and I really didn't want nothing to do with, and wasn't buying into any of that God stuff. You know, I mean, it's a heck of a place to wind up in Alcoholics Anonymous, just because everybody's patting everybody on the back and hugging each other and doing all that kind of good stuff, you know. And then, right off the bat, I remember I went to one of my, I used to say pre-Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, when I just went to, I went for my mother, and they had a couple special meetings for me, and they talked about that. Oh, that's no lie, they did. You know, I told the people that were here last time in the tent when I spoke for 10 minutes that up there in Springville, John, they used to call him John the Barber, and he was an Alcoholics Anonymous, and when I got out of the service, I was just getting ready to turn 21, and, you know, he was trying to recruit me for this thing, you know, because I had a habit of, I was town drunk, but, and so he made a deal with the Lieutenant Taylor down there at the County Sheriff's in Porterville, and when I ended up in the tank down there, well, he called John up, and then John would come down and act like he was on some H&I mission. I know that now. I didn't know that then. But he'd always wind up in front of the cell I was at and pitch this AA thing to me, you know. And he might have hooked me, because a few times I gave him a dollar, you know, to get me a pack of cigarettes. And he took the dollar, but he never got me any cigarettes. And they had a, I remember they had a Sunday night meeting, probably the only Sunday night meeting they ever had in Springville, and then there was a, like a Wednesday night meeting, and it was in this little building there, and one time it was Kenny and John, and the other time it was Bill A. and John and somebody else, and they were special meetings for me. They really were. I found that out later, and I found out that's not really how it's supposed to work. But so anyway, but anyway, I told them I really didn't want it. I didn't need it. I was too young, and I was too damn young. I had too much stuff to do. You know, I had a few more cars to wreck, and you know, and, things like that. And see how long I could go without working. Yeah, I'm 65 now, and you know, and I still don't believe in work. I really don't. It's because of Alcoholics Anonymous that I went to work. You know, because I wanted to have hot water from my shower, and I wanted to buy my own cigarettes. Got tired of bumming cigarettes, you know. And anyway, so I went to those few little special meetings they had for me. No, I wasn't interested in it. I really wasn't, you know. And I figured the only reason Kenny gave up being the town drunk, and the only reason John did it is because they were older. Hell, if I got old and that screwed up, you know, hell, I'd probably give it up and go to AA too. You know, but, and so anyway, I think I had 17 public intoxications, and 3 drunk drive-ins, and one
for one for possession of controlled substance, and then in Sacramento I did what any good alcoholic would do. I was up there at 46th and J at 909 46th and J at my cousin's, and I went down to and went around the corner bar and got tanked up, and I woke up and there were these black boots, blue pants. I looked up and there was a cop. And I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "You tell me." And I said, "Where am I?" He said, "What do you mean, where are you?" I said, "No, what's the address?" And he said, "It's 907 47th Street. And I said, "Oh, shit." Missed it by a block. You know, and I ended up down in this hank down there. And I got out of that one because I had relatives that had connections. You know, and they all went to school together, and they were hardcore Catholics, and they had people that were lawyers, people that were cops, and people that were this and that, you know. And so anyway, before I ever went to court, you know, I took me out of the felony tank, put me in a misdemeanor tank, and then next thing you know, they took me home, and when I took me back to that 909 46th Street and J Street, and it was kind of like they were sitting around there, and they had this all figured out, you know, that Vietnam had screwed me up. Nobody, I mean, they were all drunks themselves. Hell, it wasn't drinking that screwed me up. It was Vietnam that screwed me up, and I had these mental problems. And they had called Palo Alto and arranged for me to check in Palo Alto and get some help, you know. And I told them that was bullshit. And I made such a deal out of it that they gave me bus money to come back to Springville. And so anyway, I'm just trying to, like, the drinking, and I can remember, I lived on that street all my life, River Drive in Springville. I had a 66, 396 Chevelle that I paid for playing cards when I was in Vietnam, and I come home, and they gave me the keys to it, because it was my uncle's, and my old man took it over so he wouldn't get bad credit. And I don't think it was 90 days I was home. And I remember, I was looking at the house, and I said, "Oh, shit." I was about two blocks to the end of the street, and I hit fourth gear. I think I hit about third gear, and I hit them poles at the cement at the end, and I just mowed that sucker, you know. And my mother come running down there, some of the neighbors come running down there, you know, and then two highway patrols showed up, and I'm sitting on the tailgate of that El Camino, and that cop, I don't know what he said to me, but I told him, you know, what I thought of cops, and he wasn't going to let me go, and he was going to decide they were going to take me away. And then my mother started whining and all this, their baby boy, and I got out of that one too. So I got out of that one with relatives up there. I got out of the one here, you know. I mean, I didn't have any problem, you know. And I just never had to face my problem, that's all. And so, anyway, they let me out of that one. And then I got drunk one night. I told you guys here, I was in the bar, and I wasn't worried about dying. I looked around, and I didn't want to live like that. God damn, I was 22, 23 years old, and I looked around, and there was people, you know, like a lot of you people are here, like I am now, sitting around them in there all drunk up, and I said, Jesus, I can't handle that. I can't make it. I can't do another 40 years of this bullshit. You know, I mean. And so I called up, and they got a hold of John the barber and my mother, and they called that Palo Alto deal up, and they drove me up there. The only thing is that's a pretty long ride from Springville, especially back then. And you know, and by the time I get up and the sun comes up and all this stuff and you're pulling in there, you know, I don't think I really had that big a problem. But they checked me out on that nut wart, and so I went ahead and said, okay. I figured I'd stay a few days and hitchhike over to Sacramento. And they put me on the ward, and this guy, he's sitting there at the table drawing, like a fifth grade with crayon. And he jumps up, and all of a sudden just jumps up and says, I'm a fresh horn, and flops out. And his old head bounces off that linoleum floor there they had in that rec room. And I said, Jesus Christ, what's wrong with him? They said, oh, well, he took some bad LSD. I said, oh, wow. And, you know, and that. So hung around there a couple of days. I got to see this little psychiatrist in a wheelchair there. And he asked me what my problem was. And I said, you know, relatives. and I said, no, I think I'm alcoholic. He said, what do you think? And I said, hell, I don't know. I'm just a drunk. And he asked me what I was doing, and I said, I've been going to junior college and blah, blah, blah. And he says, well, he says, you know, he said, I don't know if you're alcoholic or not. He said, you're probably not. He says, what I'd recommend you do is, he says, you go home and you get a job and you go to work and you get laid regularly. And I said, man, this is my doctor here. He didn't realize I wasn't, I wasn't employable. And most of those gals, even though a lot of them had a lot of pity in them, their pity had run out towards me. So I didn't have much chance of getting laid. I liked that. That let me off the hook. And I came back, I hitchhiked to Sacramento first. And there was this guy in there, I think one of Jack's buddies was in there, he's checked in there to beat some drug rap or something. And we kind of clicked. And but he had some money in the kitty. I didn't have any money in the kitty. And he said, well, here, you can't leave here without some road money. And I said, well, for the hell, I'll never be able to pay you back. I'll probably never see you again. He says, man, it don't matter. He says, we're brothers. And he gave me like $10. $10 back then was a lot of money. And so I had $10. I hitchhiked over to Sacramento, and they weren't real happy to see me. I didn't need that. You know, I'm not going to hang around with people, you know, don't really, you know, understand me. And so I went out in 99 and hitchhiked back to Springville. And back then, little draft beers at Melody Hill Square Club was 30 cents. And I still got, I probably got $5 or $6 that $10 left. And I didn't go home. I didn't do this. I went in the bar. And I can remember telling them. And they didn't believe me. I said, where you been? We haven't seen you for. You been stuck up on the reservation drunk up there drinking wine? I said, no. I said, hell, I said, I've been up Palo Alto. I said, I was on a nut board. That's all bullshit. I said, yeah, I was up there. I kind of told him what was going on, you know, how, and I told him what that old doc said and all that. And, you know, and I fit right back in. You know, no big deal. They had this old crew up there that up in Doyle Springs when it was still going private part with the old guy that was the caretaker. He was the stepdad of my one buddy. And he used to hire all the old rummies to go up and rake the leaves at the beginning of the season for those people to have clean, nice cabins, you know, the respectable deal. And so I asked if I could go rake leaves. And he kind of, he hesitated. I said, what the hell? And I remember the one old guy says, hell, he's as big a drunk as we are, you know, this old guy said. And old Fred said to me, he says, yeah, but he says, I know those guys are going to stay until the raking's done. He says, but I don't think you'll stay until the raking's done, you know. And so anyway, you know, I'm up there on the raking the cabins with the old drunks, you know. I got in here when I was 26, so it had to happen sometime before I was 26. So that's not real good, you know. And he was right, because he paid us on that weekend, started on Monday, and he gave us a little advance. But he wasn't going to give me one, but he gave me a little advance. And I never made that. And I had some buddies that I ran around with, and they said I should start smoking pot and maybe drop a little acid and get in touch with myself or something. And I remember that kid up there in Palo Alto, I did get something out of that trip. Because you know? I knew I'd be just like that some bitch. I'd be jumping up saying I was something and flopping on the floor. But anyway, these two guys, they bought me a gallon jug of N Rosé, and we went up on the Balch Park side, and they were going to drop acid and play with themselves in snow or something up there. And I was supposed to be the lookout or whatever the hell you call it, in case one of them had a bad trip. And I said, you guys are nuts. I said, I'll have enough of this wine in me. I said, hell, I won't know whether you're having a bad trip, good trip, and I won't care. Anyway, so then there was a time when I did crazy things like said I wasn't going to drink, but I'd go in and shoot a couple of games of pool and wake up in the dunk tank in Portville. Now I remember what happened. Hell, I don't remember the two games I played. And that has more to do with me being an alcoholic than all those other things I did or happened to me or whatever. Is that I couldn't, when I took a drink, I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I didn't know whether I was going to pick up a 2x4 and decide you didn't need to live, or I was just going to stand there and giggle and piss my pants. I had no idea where it was going or what was going to happen. And I think that's really probably not having that control. Of course, that's what it says in the book. It makes me an alcoholic. And so I caught that last drunk driving. And I was 26, and they had this program just coming out with the court card carriers and sending court. And they were going to give me that in the halfway house in Porterville there. And I told them, I'll just go to jail. I'm not going to that halfway. I didn't know what the hell that halfway house was, but I sure as hell wasn't going to it. You know, and I hadn't done a whole bunch of jail time, but I knew what jail was. And then, so they kind of worked out a deal there where I didn't have to go in the halfway house. But I was supposed to go to Alcoholics Anonymous twice a week. And I had enough experience with Alcoholics Anonymous to know that going there and sitting with them old bastards for an hour and a half twice a week beat the hell out of going over there in jail and sitting there 24/7. Yeah. And so I go down to and the counselor there, Rocky, he ran the halfway house, and he's the one that set it up that way, and he told me to go check some meetings out and not to, you know, judge it on, you know, just, you know, check a few out, because you might not like some, but he didn't tell me that some of them might not like you. And so I did that. But I went to Lindsay because I didn't want to run into anybody I knew. And then I went to a meeting in the halfway house in Porterville, and God dang if there wasn't old John and Kenny were there, you know, in Springville. And man, I didn't want to run into them. I knew, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't want to run into them. And here they was friendly. They was glad to see me. You know, that kind of pissed me off. They were gloating what they were doing. And so I went into the Monday night meeting, and I think there was one or two other people in the Monday night meeting over there at 4th and Oak. And they didn't really like us car carriers. We weren't there for the right reasons, you know. So they started a beginner's. It was a study meeting. So they started a beginner's meeting in the room next door, just for us. And that was kind of neat. And the few people that really didn't, that were, now I know, the principles of core personality and all that good stuff, they didn't really like each other in there. There was a few of them, they coughed into the beginner's meeting, you know, and going to save all us beginners. And so that kind of worked out. And then, but there were some crazy people there. I talked about them last time. There was Doc Liu and a few other people. And they were big on the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were big on taking the steps and getting a sponsor. And then there was people like Ola Opie there and a few others that they didn't really care what I looked like. They didn't care how, you know, they talk about people that are ignorant or lack of education or whatever, use vulgar language, then what the hell you expect out of me? Because I was ignorant and I didn't have much education. I mean, that's how I talk. That's how my buddies talk. And they weren't worried about that. You know, and they didn't care about the fact that I had a little longer hair and was shaggy and I was, like, my jeans had holes in them and that I wasn't interested in working. I had two or three W-2s or whatever that didn't break $300 after I got out of the service, you know. And that wasn't because I was working under the table either. So, you know, they told me that, but I want to know what an alcoholic was. I asked an alcoholic son. I asked, what's an alcoholic? Every meeting I go to, I was a troublemaker, I think, is what it really was. But, and people really couldn't tell me. They couldn't tell, or everybody had, there'd be 10 different, you know. And I had to figure out, well, maybe, really, what, and that's when I got into it, and I did a lot of research on it, listened to tape, went to meetings, asked people, did all this stuff. And I hit on that part there where it says, we're men and women, we no longer control our drinking. And I couldn't get out of that, Doc Liu was the one that was, he told me there was two parts of this Alcoholics Anonymous, which is going to be into a sober monster later in life, but the thing is there's the gloom and doom, and then there's all the good stuff, all the stuff you're going to get, and all the stuff going to come back, and all this wonderful stuff, you know, where you're going down the road, you see the rabbit running across, and you just stop and giggle, you know. We sell that part real good. Man, just overemphasize it. But they don't do that anymore. They told me, Tom, if you're not taking the steps, or you haven't taken the steps, then you're not recovered or recovering, whichever one you want to argue. You know, you're an untreated case of alcoholism. If you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I was an untreated case of alcoholism for a little while in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, you know, if you don't drink, you come to meetings, keep coming back, you know, and think it'll get better. And they're not bullshit. It will get better. You know, the cops ain't chasing me for being drunk. You know, they let me come to Sunday dinner at folks. You know, the old lady slipped me $5 now and then. And, you know, I said I used to come with her for her. I came to keep my hustle going. That was what I did. But anyway, and it got better. But the thing is I didn't get better. All I got was dry. All I got was dry, and I had to run the meetings to argue with the old bastards just so I didn't go out and get drunk. Yeah. And then I can remember. And then I got into this book, and now I've got a whole different viewpoint of it. But you know, back then, but I didn't want this thing, like I said last time, I didn't want to come in here and get well for 6 months, a year, or whatever, and then, wham, start that same old bullshit. I've done enough of that. And so I got this goofy idea that I wanted something, if I was going to do this, I wanted it to last. You know, but there was people in Alcoholics Anonymous, not a lot of them, but a few of them, that would point things out to me. You know, and they told me that it's a one day a time program. You know, that means we only have to deal with it. But me being an alcoholic, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, that I would never be able to drink successfully again in the rest of my life, but I only had to deal with it one day. You know, and that kind of put a different slant on the thing. And then there was a goofy old bastard talked about, which still raises people's hackles today, about permanent sobriety. You know, and I wanted permanent sobriety. You know, if I was going to do it, this thing. And then so I got in the book for, mainly for self-defense. You know, you try, don't make any major decisions for a year. I'm not an Alcoholics Anonymous, 2 or 3 meetings, and they're telling me to make a decision for my life and will over the care of God, and I don't even believe in God. That's pretty damn major. You know, that's kind of major, isn't it? You know, I'm supposed to come in to believe there's something power in me, greater power in me to restore me to sanity. The sanity is being that I'll still say no to a drink. You know, I mean, they got me coming, telling me to believe in stuff and telling me to make decisions, and that, you know, I mean, and yet they tell me, can't have sex for a year. Well, I know they're going to have sex with me for a couple of years anyway. So anyway, I can remember going in there and this is how I started. I'm not proud of it. I'm not saying the right way or the wrong way to do it. But I come in there and they say, you got a higher power yet? You believe in God yet, Tom? And I said, no, I still think God's the son of a bitch. But, and I come in there one night and I said, well, I got that taken care of. They do. And what do you do? I said, I made nothing my higher power. Because I said, something can't be nothing, but nothing, I said, is something. You know? And I think it was the David brother there, the old Jim Allen. He said, I've been here 6 months, I haven't been understand this goofy little bastard. But he said, whatever he's doing is working for him, and what I'm doing is working for me. So if he wants to have nothing for a higher power, let the little bastard have nothing for a higher power. You know? So I had nothing for a higher power for a while. But I used to talk to nothing all the time. So I got the book, and I got into the book, and I and they had all this crap. They had, all these outlines and all these things from these different organizations, all this other stuff, take the inventory and all this and this and that. And I said, man, I don't know what I'm going to do about that. And it was like with Doc Lou, and I think it was the other old lady. She says, you know, she says, you got to talk to the cookbook. You don't need all that bullshit. Just do what it says in there. Well, okay, I'll give that a try. So I did that. You know, and I wrote that stuff out. And first, I was writing a life story, and it's not what it's all about. That's what you write. The things that are bugging me and my character beef. And like it says in there, it's resentments and all that. I find out why, so I won't have to do it anymore. And I'll get little tip-offs ahead of time, and I won't have to do it. You know, and so anyway, I wrote out some of that stuff. And then I hear now where people got a sponsor, and so they can take the fifth step with their sponsor. I'm not saying that's bad. I said, well, sure, the hell wasn't for me, because when I got into the book, it talks about find somebody that you can trust and that won't be affected. And I sure as hell couldn't go down there and share that part of my fifth step that might involve one of Kenny's daughters. You know, the old town drunk that had become my sponsor. Surely that would affect me. I mean, it really would. You know, and so anyway, I don't recommend it, but Bob was had about, he's got a few weeks on me, and we took the fifth step together. I trusted him, he trusted me, and for somehow it kind of worked. But just to back up a little bit, I kind of delayed in there on taking the fourth step after I took that big third step, just because, you know, I messed up and said, well, I'm never not ready yet, you know, and I'll do it when I'm comfortable. And old guy says, well, you do it when you get comfortable. He said, yeah, you'll be drunk before you get comfortable. And he flipped the book open and he says, right here, and he went to the last part of chapter of step three in the big book. And it'll have little permanent effect, if not at once, oh, you know. And I said, well, how do you do it? He says, you get your number two pencil, get your bad name legal pad, right up on top of it. This is Tom McDonald's fourth step, and I'm taking this son of a bitch because I don't want to drink no more. He says, and you'll have it started. He says, and then you open the book up and follow what it says there. Well, I did that, and I was a proud son of a bitch. You know? Because I could go to those meetings, and when they were on hounding about taking the fourth step, I didn't have to take that hounding no more. I got them off my back. You know? And then, on the fifth step, and I was going to do it like a lot of people, just me, and if I say it was just me and nothing, that already did enough, you know? And why should, give me a reason to take the fifth step. Oh boy, opens up the big book out and shows in that part, says, well, any people that don't do this or have paraphrasing, you know, they get drunk again. They get to give you the best reason first. I said, well, you dirty bastard. And so I go and take, I took a fifth step, and then, and I don't know about anybody else, but when you sit there and you finally come clean with yourself about yourself, all the objectionable and bad stuff, you know, there's a slight period there before you get a little of your ego and your little bit of, you know, I'm not that bad back, where, man, you're ready. I'm ready. Take this shit. You can have it. You know? And then the seventh, come get it. It's yours, you know? And then come the ninth step. And I probably overdid the ninth step. I'm not sure I did overdid the IX. Maybe because I'm still here, so part of it must have been right. But I had shit in there. You know, I didn't bring the ball back in the first grade to the ball rack like I was supposed to. You know, I mean, I went from I don't need this stuff to, man, I'm going to put it all in there, you know? So I kind of overdid that a little bit, but I did do that part where you go look people up and you tell them, and you eyeball to eyeball, And they even forgot they even knew me, some of them.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, well, and I explained to them what I was doing.
I just didn't go say, oh, I'm sorry because I took that six pack of beer out of your back seat, you know, up there at the river. You know, stuff like that. I told them why I was doing it. I said, you know, I ended up being an alcoholic. Ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. Part of this thing is we got to make amends, you know, for the wrongs we've done if we want to continue to stay sober. And I said, I don't ever want to drink again. So that's why I'm doing this. You know, and some of them kind of caught on, but there was a few cases here where I didn't really give a shit about them, but I did care about not drinking. So I was doing it. Probably when the best motive, the right reason, or whatever, but I did do it. And it's amazing. Some of them, you know, thought it was really a wonderful thing. And a few of them, it was like, you know, you're an idiot. Get the hell out of here. But that didn't matter. It didn't matter. It's the fact that I did it. And I was willing to do it. And that, you know, and then the 10th step and that. And then the 11th step, that deals through me. I mean, prayer and meditation. I remember talking to people and they said, I don't know anything about that stuff. And what I did know about it was, you know, I'm not going to go in some closet and sit there for 5 hours a day cross-legged with a candle flickering or something. I said, shit, not without smoking some pot anyway. But, you know, I don't know how to do that. And they opened it up there. And like old Lou said, he says, for dummies like you, they got a pre-planned deal for you. You don't know how to pray and meditate, they got a deal in here if you follow it. You know, they got a deal before you go to bed at night, they got a deal when you wake up in the morning, and they kind of tell you, you know, they take care of it. It's real basic, it's real elementary, and it doesn't put you in the hot rock class of meditators and prayers, but but it does the job. It does the job. At least it did for me. It did for me, you know. And basically, I've kind of hung on to that to even today, you know. And then there's the 12th step. And Rick, so I wonder if I have any problem talking this one. I'm a, you know, don't get caught with me in the parking lot. You might not get home before they're like, but, anyway, you know, it says we had that spiritual awakening result of taking these steps. You know, we recover by the steps we take, not the meetings we make. And people, when I say that, people say, oh, he's putting the meetings down. I'm not putting the meetings down. You set these meetings for, and just don't do the steps, and there's a good chance you're going to end up drinking because you're going to be a case of untreated alcoholism. And some of you will be able to go a lot longer than others, and I believe that. Now, whether that's, you believe that, that's all right with me. So, and what's the spiritual experience? Well, in the back of the book, in the appendix, it talks about that, and it talks about the God-conscious people get all, you know, more into God, I guess. And it talks about the practical people and the personality change and by learning, and that's kind of where I fit in. I've had a really big personality change. When that cop drives by, I don't go, fuck you. You know, and then it flips around, picks me up, hauls me away. You know? I don't bow to any of them. I just go on about my business. And man, life changed. That's a kind of a spiritual experience. And, so anyway, you take a lot of heat from the God people if your personality type changer in this thing, because, you know, everybody wants you to do it the way they did it because it's working for them, so it's got to be the right way to do it. And doesn't matter if the way you're doing it's working for you, that's not right because it's not the way they do it. But we try to carry this message. Try. Another one of them big words that's only got three letters in it. We try. Yeah, we try. It's not how successful the people are with the stuff we give away so we can keep it.
You know, what it's about is how willing we are to give away what's been so freely given to us, and then we try to do that. And then we'll get it. I mean, I'm not going to ask myself up here tonight, but I'm going to get to keep my 38 plus years of sobriety and go for another, so it's worth it. But and then that last part. See, that's why I can't judge. I can't judge anybody in here of how good a program you really got, how good you're doing. You know, because I don't know, unless I really know you, and I'm intimate with you a little bit, I don't know how you're practicing it in all your affairs. We all know people in here, and we've all seen them, and they've had long lengths of sobriety, and they've gotten drunk, and we say, oh, I don't know how Joe. I don't know how Joe got drunk. I mean, he had a wonderful program, you know? And, you know, Joe was going to 23 meetings a week, you know? Somewhere along the line, he'd take the steps, and he'd tell you in every one of those 23 meetings, you know? And he'd taken those steps, and he'd tell that newcomer, you know, what they had to do and the right way for them to get this thing, you know? And he was GSR, CSR, head of the New Year's Committee, all this kind of bullshit, you know? I mean, he was working a great program. How did old Joe get drunk? You know? And I'm nuts, I know. But then the thing is you know, when he'd go home, and if the dog was in the way, he'd kick the son. Came out of the way, you know. If he was, the old lady didn't have dinner, you know, this is what happened. The old lady didn't have dinner ready on time, you know, and he didn't bash her up against the wall, you know, he'd hop in the car. Instead of running to the bar like the old days, he'd run down to one of them 23 meetings, and he'd tell them boys down there what a bitch of a wife he had, that by God, he didn't have to take a drink. You know? And then he'd come in, and he was running late, and he didn't have time, he didn't feed the cats and dogs, because he had to run down and make that meeting, because it was a 13th birthday meeting that of the month already that he's made, because he couldn't let the newcomers down to let them know that Alcoholics Anonymous works. You know? But is it really working if you can't take time to feed the cat and dog? You can answer that however you want, but my answer would be, you know, I don't think it's working too good. But see, those are the things that I don't know about you people, because I don't know all you people, so I don't know how you're doing it in all your affairs. There was another little one I had there that was, you know, if I put that 4 down on the scorecard out the golf course when I really shot a 5, you know, because the wind's what it's all about, still what it's all about, you know, that's a goddamn affair that they're talking about here. Really? Golf? A little score on a scorecard? That could be part of this affair that you're on after all this time? You know, you're really freaky, Tom. But anyway, I got to wrap it up. I ran it right down to what he said, and you know, I got hours and hours of bullshit because I'm kind of living a hermit existence. Ain't got nothing. But I just talked to the cat, so talked to all you smiling faces. You know, I got a lady in here. She was my lady friend at one time. I got an ex-wife. She got people I sat in meetings with and cafes with, and all that. So I'm a lucky son of a bitch. Thank you.